A living spoken language needs at least two people, one to talk and the other to talk back. That's Charlie Mangula from Northern Australia speaking Amerindoc. He's the only one left in the world who can. And he is speaking to someone in the spirit world. But when Charlie himself goes off to the spirit world, there will only be this recording. This is the contemporary fate of a third of the more than 6,000 languages humans speak. It's estimated that fully half of them may be extinct in the next 50 years, with humanity evolving into a community of commerce requiring a small set of easily translatable languages. A new PBS documentary, Language Matters, premiering January 25th, takes a look at what the world stands to lose in this century. The documentary is hosted by poet Bob Holman. It's directed by David Gruben. Holman says the predicament of the Amerindoc language is where the story begins.
You're talking about a very unusual situation in Aboriginal Australia. Charlie Mangula is the last speaker of Amerindoc. And we love to start our film, Language Matters, with him, because when you talk about a language dying and all of a sudden you're looking at a person who, when he forgets a word, there's nobody he can ask what that word is. It's gone. When that language is gone, it's gone forever. Now, how has that language lasted tens of thousands of years is another question. And that the answer to that is partly in the way that he is a song man, which is the English word for the poet in the Aboriginal peoples. They keep their language alive in various forms. While we were busy in making inventions, they were busy working on their languages. And one of them is a spirit language that we don't know how to translate. All we know is that he's talking to his ancestors in a very special way. It's part of the way the language has survived.
Are these oral traditions, alphabetic traditions in most cases? You know, a lot of people say that the internet is revitalizing an oral tradition, but these are more sophisticated than emoticons, right?
They are oral traditions. In fact, the languages that are dying are pretty much oral languages. That is, the only writing that they've done has been brought to them with orthographies from the linguists. But in a way, the digital consciousness is a kind of synthesis of orality and literacy. And now for the first time, we are able to actually record these languages, oral languages, in a way that gives them their fullness with technology that's available to people for cameras and film. But at the same time, this is the technology that's part of the reason why these languages are dying out so fast right now.
And these are very sophisticated languages. Because they're oral doesn't mean that they're not sophisticated. They're
right.
They're filled with profound myths and stories. They just happen to be oral.
Do the people who are in the communities of these languages, do they recognize the threat? Do they feel the threat? Are they yearning to join the rest of the world? How does it work? And I suspect it varies.
Yeah, that's what's complicated here, because we can understand why people who speak an endangered language want to join the dominant language. It's, as one person says in our film, it's for our babies. We want them to succeed. On the other hand, there are people in these cultures that are so proud of their language and so firm about it that they are struggling, like in Hawaii, to preserve the language with schools in which only Hawaiian is spoken, things like that.
But, you know, really, John, the answer to this crisis is simpler than solving the physical ecology of the planet, and that is bilinguality or multilinguality. You know, there's no reason why you can't learn your mother tongue at home and speak, and then when you leave the home, you'll be inundated with the bully language. Turn on the television, you're going to have the English coming at you. Walk outside and you'll see all the English signs. But it's just that people have felt that in order to assimilate, they have to leave their whole identity behind. And what's happened now is that it's reached such a pitch that we're losing languages that are actually treasures of humanity. They're systems of consciousness that connect us to the planet in a way that is unique. And to lose one is really to lose something.
Well spoken in English. Let's get personal here. What kind of a person are you? Are you trapped pretty much in the English language as I am from birth, or are you multilingual? Do you have different tongues, both of you?
My French, my Spanish, not enough for me to be able to say I see the world through to French and Spanish. I think I can understand something about how the French and Spanish speakers have a different feel for things, because I know something about the languages, but I don't see the world that way.
And you?
And, you know, I've learned the Romance languages enough to get along, and wherever I have gone in studying these languages, I've picked up enough to be able to have a conversation. But it's Welsh that I've been studying. Welsh is the only language that's been on the endangered list and then come off. And, of course, as a poet, the Welsh poetry has also drawn me to it.
Dwi am fynd â thi i Far Rockaway, Far Rockaway. Mae enw'r lle yn gitar yn fy mhen, yn gor o rhythmau haf a llanw'r môr. Yn sgwrs cariadon dros goffi cry ar ôl taith drwy'r nos mewn pick-up di.
In fact, it's some of the techniques in Welsh poetry that have helped keep that language alive all these thousands of years.
What yearnings about meanings, about modes of expression in some of these languages that have no analog in English did you discover in your production of this film?
I would say that in Welsh, for example, that the cynhanaeth that I was referring to before, this a type of a poetic device called, in English maybe best, a consonant chime, where you hear the hardness of the consonants in a sort of mirrored form in the poem. We hear it when we listen to Dylan Thomas in English. You say, why is that sounding so great? Well, actually, he's using the devices of Welsh poetry he's bringing to us in English.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Now, how does that make you feel different? All I can say is you go down to the pub in any town in Wales and start hearing that language, those consonants chime, it's a different experience.
So is your mission a call for preservation, a kind of, wilderness preserve a notion in this film, or is it more just experience this? This is still alive. It's vital. Remember this still exists.
The idea of preserving is not quite it, John. It's because languages are a living thing, and they've got to get out there in the world and change. You've got to be able to use them and joke in them and whisper in your lover's ear with them. And
because language is more than communication. It's more than just these words that we're using. It is all about identity and, finally, culture, and it's a whole vision of the world. And you're going to lose a way of seeing the world when you lose language.
That's Bob Holman, poet, and director Dave Grubin on their new PBS documentary, Language Matters, which premieres January 25th. So, languages left to languish. How about in your toy box? Favorite childhood toy, preserved in memory at least?
Hi, this is Holly from Portland, Oregon. As a military brat, my siblings and I spent extraordinary amounts of time at the Army post pool. We were up at dawn for swim team practice, and then we'd go back most days to play Marco Polo, practice our dives, listen to the lifeguards' whistles, and find out who could hold their breaths the longest underwater. So maybe it's not a toy, but summer days at the pool evoke such wonderful memories of summer.
Nice memories. Catch up on that conversation, listen back to anything on the show, and check out The Weekender this week. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.